The inevitable has happened, and the Pelicans made a change in their front office. It's time to play baseball. Take me out to the ball game. Yes, indeed. And we'll go down memory lane with the legend of the hardwood at LSU. Big show planned for you and yours today, Friday, February 15th, 2019.
Long stretch without a whistle. Smith slings it out. Cornett, left wing three, buries it. Luke Cornett with his third three. And with 2:17 to play, timeout Lloyd Pierce in Atlanta. Knicks on top, 102-87.
The head-banded Husky. Into the lane he goes. A runner with a right hand is going to go down. He's making shots everywhere. He's got 14. And a Magic Richie lead by 28.
Well, they try to take everything away from him, but he has a counter for everything, whether it's a jumper, you want to get up on him. He finishes going to the basket.
Holiday over to Miller. Angle left. Inside the paint. Randall again. Fades from the crowd, shoots and scores. Six-footer for Randall gives him 31 points.
Good afternoon. Yeah, the Pelicans got a win last night. Anthony Davis got hurt at halftime. Anthony Davis left the building somewhere in the third period with his agent, Rich Paul, to go get an MRI. He left the building. And today, Dell Demps has left his position as the general manager of the New Orleans Pelicans. Gail Benson had enough, and the Pelicans fired Demps today, clearing the way for a new top basketball executive to oversee the Anthony Davis trade talks. It was inevitable. It was inevitable. It was too quick to put somebody in the position leading up to the trade deadline. And management told Dell Demps, you don't do anything. You don't do anything. You wait. Demps has been the Pelicans GM for 9 years, included three trips to the playoffs, advancing only once past the first round. Former Cleveland Cavalier, Atlanta Hawk GM Danny Ferry, a consultant for the Pelicans, and assistant GM David Booth are candidates to become interim GM. They're just going to hold down the fort. Gail Benson will go and use her trusted soldiers to go find the best GM out there. For now, Alvin Gentry and his staff are safe. The organization's pleased in how Gentry has navigated the team under these difficult circumstances. Gentry's future is dependent upon who the next GM is going to be, even though he did sign a contract extension in the offseason. According to reports, Gail Benson was angry, livid, over Davis's trade demand and her belief that outside forces were trying to push the franchise into decisions that didn't make sense for the team. Her mandate has been take back control from outside sources and find a way to get sustainable winning in one of the league's smallest markets. I don't know who the potential people are. They're out there, but we shall see. But she was livid that Anthony Davis left the building. Livid. Pelicans are now 26-33. The All-Star break. Anthony Davis will be in Charlotte. He'll play. But boy, what a scene. And as Alvin Gentry so adeptly put, it is a dumpster fire. And that's exactly what it is. So we'll move on to bigger and better things. It was inevitable that Dell Demps was gone. Inevitable. We got a big show planned for you and your state coming up, in about 8 minutes. The UL Raging Cajuns open up their college baseball season. 23rd-ranked Texas coming to town. Tony Robichaud will join us, the head coach of the Raging Cajuns. The LSU Tigers open up tonight against the ULM Warhawks. It's Military Appreciation Weekend at the Box. Head coach Paul Maneri will join us in this hour as well. So we got your baseball covered from top to bottom. In hour number two, well, you know, LSU's getting on the road. They're getting ready to fly out as we speak to go to Athens, Georgia, to try and keep pace with the Tennessee Volunteers. 10-1 in the league. They're trying to get their 11th win in 12 tries. This is the second team that they have played now for the second time this season. Arkansas was the first. They beat Arkansas the first time out. We all know what happened in Pete's Palace the second time the two met. Arkansas upset LSU. LSU beat Georgia in Baton Rouge earlier. Pretty tough game. Georgia dominated in the paint. They scored at will inside. LSU has to go to Stegman Coliseum, try and get a win tomorrow. With that in mind, I thought after the Kentucky win and how prevalent that win was to this year's team, but how prevalent the name of Kentucky in basketball has been related to LSU basketball throughout the years. My coach, Dale Brown, will join us, and we'll sit down and talk about all things. No telling where the direction will go with Coach Brown. But I will try and rein him in and talk about what Kentucky meant to his program back in the day, what he thinks that win over Kentucky will do to this current LSU basketball team, what he thinks about the job Will Wade has done, and what he thinks are the limits of this year's team. How far can they go? Are they a legitimate Final Four contender? Some people think they are. We will see. It's very difficult that first time around. That Final Four doesn't come easily. You've got to earn it. And this team seems to have the fiber if they stay healthy, if they stay focused. And we'll find out a little bit more about this LSU basketball team Saturday in Athens. How do they handle the applause, the acclaim, the that-a-boys, how do they handle that? Do they stay focused? They're a better team than Georgia. We'll see if they can stay focused on the task at hand and continue this incredible run. It's really, you know, football has a great season. Basketball's having its best season and many, many a moon. They're 20-4. Are you kidding me? A solid, among the bracketologists, a solid three seed right here, right now. And you're a three seed, that means you got a shot to go a long way in the NCAA tournament. And with a lucky bounce here, a break there, heck, Final Four is not out of the realm of possibility. It really isn't. When's the last time we could say that about LSU basketball? And LSU baseball picked number one in the country. If you're a Tiger fan, this is the time. You have got to be ecstatic. Yes, indeed. You've got to be ecstatic. We're brought to you in part each and every day by D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Bro Bridge. Frankie's a huge sports fan. He's always kind of deliberate. Should I go see the Cajuns play? Should I go see the Tigers play? So he mixes it up and matches it up. He's loyal to both, and his store is just great. You can find everything and anything at D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, including that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. Man, I wish I had a cheeseburger for lunch today. I really, really do. But I'll do it another day. And when I do, it's going to be great. It really is. So DC's Little Capital Exxon, it's my go-to stop. Why don't you try it? It'll be yours as well. I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Bro Briggs. CD is in the master control suite. He's taking care of all the business as he does. And we are really ready to rock and roll here today because we've got a who's who's guest list. It's a long baseball season. It really is. It's so great to see Gunnar Leger back on the bump for the Raging Cajuns. What a player. What an All-American. And a lot of returning players for the Raging Cajuns. Same thing with the LSU baseball Tigers. So much will depend. Zach Hess, is he going to be that dominant Friday night picture? Is he? Time will tell. It all gets started tonight at the Teague and at the Box. And we'll have our baseball previews coming up right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Two of the nicest men in all of collegiate sports, Tony Robe, the Robe from the Raging Cajuns, and Paul Maneri of the LSU Tigers. We'll have them back-to-back next. Sit back and relax and enjoy it. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Nothing like opening day of baseball. And tonight, the Louisiana Raging Cajuns welcome the 23rd-ranked Texas Longhorns to Teague Moore Field at Russo Park for a three-game series. He's been manning the sideline for many, many a year now, and the head coach of the Raging Cajuns, kind enough to join us on a busy day, Coach Tony Robichaux. Robes, here we go again, my friend. How are you?
That's it. Everybody's happy. It's like Major League Baseball spring training, and everybody's undefeated.
Is there anything you haven't seen in a baseball game? I mean, you've been coaching a long, long time. You've been through three name changes. You got there when it was Southwestern Louisiana, then it's Louisiana Lafayette, now it's Louisiana. I mean, is there something you haven't seen yet?
No, not really. I think everything, you know, once you, they say, you know, you become an expert in your field after 10,000 hours, you know, and so the only thing I think I've seen over time is that you start to realize how technically the game scripted out. I mean, it's kind of the same, right? Mm-hmm. Over time. Now, mm-hmm. First start, you don't really realize that, but I think when you've been in it long enough, I think what happens now is that, you know, you start to, like a pilot, I guess, that's been flying long enough, or fisherman that's been fishing long enough, he can look and tell you whether he's going to catch some fish or not just by the weather or looking at the water or whatever, because he's been fishing for so long, you know. So it's kind of scripted out, right? I mean, you going into a stadium tonight with a team that you fight in some history. So I think that's the biggest issue with who you're opening with. Some people might open up with somebody that the name is not big, so now that's right. Dangerous. Because they have scholarships. I mean, they've got a $300 bat in their hand, but their name might not be big. So it's all, I guess, relative to who you're playing, who you're opening up with, and trying to put your eyes on, you know, you've been out there all fall and early spring. You kind of think you know what's going to go on, but you kind of don't know until the real live action starts.
Yeah, Head Coach Tony Robichaux, kind enough to join us. You get your All-American back. How's Gunnar Leger doing these days?
He's doing good. You know, we'll see. You know, I mean, he hasn't thrown a pitch in a while outside of the work he's been doing. Right. He's looked good in squad games, and he feels good. But, you know, we'll see. Tonight I told him to be patient. You know, he might have to knock some rust off of him. Who knows? And then he might go out there and be Gunner. You never know. Yeah. But I just think we got to be patient with him, being that he's coming off of what he's coming off of.
Is there a pitch count plan for him, or is it just a by feel as to how the game is going?
Well, you know, all our starters opening weekend, we normally don't let them really go past 75. We try to temper it a little bit. I mean, you know, the NCAA doesn't let you start practicing, you know, you're 20 hours a week until the 25th. Of January, and you open on the 15th, that's not a lot of time. Now, they've had protocol that they took home with them, you know, to do what they need to do, but I wish one day we could wake up with all the Tommy John injuries and try to get these pitches here earlier to get them up and running under our protocol. You know, they don't have access, some of them, when they go home to what they have access here. But
right.
Having said that, we'll watch him inning by inning and just make sure he's good. Gunner's a veteran. He'll tell you how he feels. He doesn't lie to you. Some guys, mm-hmm. you know, try to be John Wayne and you know, they'll say, hey, I'm okay no matter what you ask them. But he's a veteran. He'll tell us along the way. But we don't think he'll throw more than 75 pitches for sure.
Tony, with Texas in mind, and you return a bunch of players off of a team that won the Western Division a year ago. You're always a good team. What areas of this ball club are you unsure of, or if any, heading into this opener?
Well, we lost good arms to the draft. You know, mm-hmm. We're losing more and more juniors now. So that's affected us. And so our pitching's young outside of Gunner. You know, we've lost Stokey and Dylan Moore out of the back of the bullpen that were seniors. And mm-hmm. we lost Nick Lee and Hogan Harris that both got drafted. Colton Schmidt was drafted. So even though he was a senior, we lost a lot of older arms. And so that's going to be our question mark. We're older on the hitting side. We are bigger. We are faster. But we still, you know, have to be able to, you know, work together as a lineup, if you will. But we are older there. Last year we were 10th in the country and the top 10 in the country defensively. Hopefully yep. we can stay with that defense, because we're going to have to help these young arms. They have a hard time developing. You got to put them in traffic. You can try all you want putting them in inner squad games and all that, but mm-hmm. until you wrap 5,000, 6,000 people around them, or Texas yeah. or LSU yeah. or whatever, you know, you got to get them in those settings. And so, and sometimes, you know, they can't manage a game early in their career. That takes a little time to learn. So we're going to have to, we'll throw a lot of arms because we're young and,
right.
and try to get them developed before conference. So that's the big thing for us. Our question mark is the age of the arms, okay. being able to grow up and mature fast enough.
Well, nobody does a better job of that than you and your staff. But I'm curious, you say getting these arms right, you got to have a good catcher. You lost Handsome Monica last year in the opener, knock on wood. How is he, and how is the catcher position faring this going into this season opener?
Well, we're very fortunate. You know, the last couple of years, that's been – kind of our injury position, and Hanson's back. He'll catch tonight. Now, he won't catch every game, but he will do some catching again for us, which is going to help us. And Sebastian Toro out of a JC is going to be good for us. And then Cole McKinnon's back, the kid that caught actually every inning last year. So,
right.
You know, knock on wood, right now we've got three solid catchers. If we can just, you know, stay healthy behind the plate, something we haven't been able to do over the last couple of years.
What's your strength of your ball club, Coach?
Well, I think this team's close. You know, I think our approach, our hitters, our two-strike account, I think we've really worked hard to drive up our on-base percentage this fall, and our walks, which definitely we didn't walk enough last year. You know, batting average has a 60% effect on runs scored, but mm-hmm. on-base percentage and slug has a 90% effect on runs scored. So you want the on-base and your slug to be good. And, you know, that was down last year. So that's the thing we hope that we can get up this fall. We've done a real good job. You know, our inner squad against San Jack, they threw some very good arms at us. And, you know, we got hit 5 times and walked 12 times.
Wow.
Now we played 12 innings. But the bottom line is, and our strikeouts were way down. And so those are some of the things I think hopefully we can build on that can make us more competitive in and out of innings by upping the walks and cutting our strikeouts down.
Tony Robichaux, the Raging Cajuns, 6:30 tonight, Cox Sports Television, the opener against the Texas Longhorns. I know a lot of coaches say they get more nervous for the season opener than they do if they're in the College World Series. How's Tony feeling today? Do you still have those butterflies like you did some 24 years ago?
Well, you do, because you're fighting the unknown, right? I mean,
yep.
by the time you're in Omaha or middle of the season, good, bad, or indifferent. You kind of got a good feel for who's your closer now and who can do what. And guys that now are getting more experience at handling certain situations, which you fight opening day, especially with a young pitching staff, is you're dealing with some unknowns because you think you know where you are because of the fall. But, again, there hadn't been a lot of people in the stadium in inter squad games. You know, it's hard to invite 10,000 people to an inter squad game. And so that's, I think, what gets most of the coaches nervous is just, you know, the unknown. You don't know until you get going. You can be too throttled up tonight, and then it can cost you. You know, so there's things that, you know, that I guess as coaches, that first one, you're trying to get them to, you know, throttle back a little bit and not be so hyped up. And as the season starts, they get good at that, you know, at handling all that. But that first one, you know, it can be a little bit more difficult to do that.
Well, I love the fact that you're playing a named team. I know the players love that. I know you got to throttle them back a little bit. But, man, you want to go up against some of the better competition, and I admire you for that. And last thing before we let you get out of here, how proud of you are of what you've seen with this baseball program, how it's developed, all the things, the Teague, how beautiful that facility is. It's got to be just like, man, it certainly has changed for the better for you.
Well, you know, it's never been about me, but you know, the greatest thing is, you know, my dad, my mom have taught all of us, you know, to be a servant leader, you know, build a tree, plant a tree. You may never sit under that shade, but somebody else is going to sit under that shade. And so my dad has always told us, you know, 90% of the time when you get a job, somebody's either, you know, cheated from it or left it in bad shape. That's why you're getting a chance to get it, but that when you get it, don't use the phone, the fax, the copying machine to get another job. You take the job you got, and you make sure when you hand it over to somebody, it's in better shape than the way you got it. So that's the one thing I tried to do and I've tried to do here that I'll continue to do until I turn it over, is that I want to honor my mother and my father by being able to turn this over one day to somebody and making sure that it's better than the way I found it.
You're the best. Man, it's a long journey. Game one of 56-plus is starting. So good luck, good fortune, stay healthy, and thank you so much as always, buddy. You're the best. We really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you having us on. Thanks.
All right, buddy. Tony Robichaux, head coach of the Raging Cajuns. Coming up next, we'll talk to the head coach of the LSU Tigers, Paul Maneri, here on the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. It is opening day. Let's play some ball. We'll be right back.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfert Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
And we welcome you back. It's always a special day when you can say it's opening day of college baseball. And the LSU Tigers begin their journey this evening with the ULM Warhawks coming to town. 37 years he's had an opening day. Now his 13th year as handing in that lineup card on the first day of the college baseball season. The head coach of the LSU Tigers, we're thrilled to get him on the program as he does each and every year. Paul Maneri joining us, and it's another great day, my friend. How are you feeling?
anxious, Jordy. Not much sleep last night. You know, every year is the unknown just drives me crazy. I told somebody the other day, I said, I get more nervous for opening day than I do if we're playing in the national championship game.
Really?
Because, yeah, it's just the unknown. You haven't played anybody since last June. You believe you know your team, but hopefully they're going to go out there and play nice and loose and aggressive and play up to their ability, and we'll be able to win a ball game. By game two of the season, you feel like you're in mid-season form.
You have it in talking with you through the years. You have an incredible memory. You can remember the greatest of the great plays, and you certainly remember the lowest of the lows. This season there's so much anticipation. Yet again, everybody's got you pegged one or two. That memory can be a dangerous thing sometimes.
Well, you know, listen, Jordy, I do what I love. You know, how many people get to roll out of bed every day and go do what they love for a living? And I love the sport, and I love the competition of it all. I love working for the university that I work for. But most importantly, I love working with young people and trying to have an impact on their lives and teaching them how to be successful and teaching them life lessons that will carry them through life. So every so often, I just have to remind myself, you know, this is what's most important. And if we recruit good enough players and coach them the right way and keep them thinking in a positive mindset, then ultimately I feel like we're going to win a lot more than we're going to lose. So I try not to worry about one game too much, but sometimes it's hard to not do it that way.
How do you talk to those before we get into the crux of this team? It's been a while, and I know you've got goals every year, and you expect to win every year. It's been since 2009, and I know that's got to be in the back of your mind because you want to win, and you want to win all the time.
I know. For most schools, they'd love to win a championship every 10 years, you know, but at LSU, it just seems like a long time. That guy, Skip Bertman, created a standard here that's unbelievable. You know, I think in the last 10 years, Jordy, honestly, I feel like the last 9 years, we probably have had four teams, maybe five, that were capable of winning the national championship. And for whatever reason, we just came up a little bit short. You know, the 3 years that Alex Bregman was here, man, 1 year we went to Omaha 57-9. And, you know, in 14, we were playing so great. And then we stubbed our toe against Houston in the eighth inning of the winning game, the game that would have won the regional. And we would have hosted an epic super regional with Texas. And the next year, you know, we got off to a good start against TCU and Omaha, and then had a couple of misplays, and before you know it, we're in the loser's bracket. A couple years ago, we were in the finals with Fullerton. With Florida. Right. The point I'm making is, you know, you've got to be good to have a chance to win the national championship. You've got to be good at the right time, and you got to have some luck. Yeah. And I realize just how hard it is. You know, winning in 09, I'll always be proud of that, and it'll stay with us forever. But I'd really like to win another one before we're done here, you know, and hopefully this is the year.
I am with you. You came out and told your players you had a rule that said they could talk about Omaha and the College World Series at Media Day, and then after that, no more. What was your thought process behind that?
Well, it's just out of respect for your opponents. You know, tonight, we're going to be playing the University of Louisiana Monroe, and they're an outstanding ball club. And if we're talking about going to Omaha or we're talking about anything other than just trying to beat this team tonight, I think it's disrespectful to them, and I don't think our attention is on what it needs to be on. You know, it's a 56-game grind. It's 30 in the conference. You got to go through the SEC tournament, and then you got to win a regional, and you got to win a super regional just to get to Omaha to have a chance to play for the national championship. If you just set your sights way down the line, imagine a football team, visualizing playing in the Super Bowl when they've got to play, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles this weekend or something. Right. You know, you just can't look too far ahead, and that's all. I mean, everybody knows where the goal
that's
is.
Right.
Everybody
that's
knows
right.
what the standard is around here. We don't have to keep talking about it. Let the fans and let the media talk about it. But as a ball player, hey, let's make this double play right here. You know, let's come through with a clutch hit. Let's make a big pitch when we need to. Let's run the bases properly. Because all of those things are cumulative, which allow you to win a given game. And if you do that in enough games, you've won enough games to put yourself in a position to give yourself a chance to get to Omaha.
What I've always admired about great coaches, and I consider you one, is the attention to detail. And I can remember talking to Kramer Robertson on this program and how he would say he would take ground ball after ground ball after ground ball, and there you were right behind him, basically in his back pocket watching, and he could field 30 in a row perfectly. Then he'd bobble one or get his feet wrong on the 31st, and you would be in his ear. It's that attention to detail. You're coaching now for June, aren't you?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, if you're happy with mediocrity, then you let things slide. But if you have high expectations and you want your players to have the high expectations and you want to be there in June to have a chance to play for the national championship, then I have a saying among the players, Jordy, that the little things add up mm-hmm. to make a big difference. Mm-hmm. And I didn't coin the phrase, but it's true. And, you know, I just don't know how to be anybody else but me. You know, it drives my wife crazy sometimes. It drives my players crazy. But it's just hard for me to ignore the little things. And if we do the little things well, then I figure the big things are going to happen in a very positive way.
Paul Mainieri, kind enough to join us. Opening night, the ULM Warhawks at the box, 7 o'clock first pitch. You've come out and said, and I was intrigued by this, that this club has unusually good chemistry about it. The word unusually, is it because it's early on, or why use that word?
Because we have so many young players, it's unusual to have good chemistry when you have so many new players on your team. But I think it's a tribute to the veterans that we have on our team, and I also think it's a tribute to the young players of the maturity that they have. When you think about this freshman class, or this, we have actually three junior college transfers in our group of 16 new players. They all were so highly touted that they. You know, they've been under the microscope. They could have signed for significant signing bonuses. They chose not to. And because of that, they have like a maturity about them. Mm-hmm. When you look at Landon Marceau or Jaden Hill, Cole Henry, Chase Costello, Saul Garza, Brock Mathis, you don't think of them as first-year players. They carry themselves with much more self-confidence. And when you combine that with guys like Duplantis and Watson and Cabrera and Hess and Peterson, et cetera, they've just blended so nicely together, and we haven't even played a game yet. You know, the true test of chemistry comes when you have some disappointing days, you know, and they're going to happen. I mean, mm-hmm. nobody goes undefeated in the sport of baseball. So, you know, when we get our nose bloodied a little bit, we'll see. Are we going to hang together or are we going to pull apart? And if we hang together, then my analysis of the chemistry will come true.
Chemistry is such an important aspect. Another strength, you've got to have one of the best, if not the best, outfields in college baseball, I would think.
I wouldn't trade our outfield for anybody's, and that's complete honesty. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't expect to have Duplantis and Watson back this year. I thought they'd both sign after last year. Well, they both came back. Daniel Cabrera is a budding superstar. So all of a sudden you put those three guys together, hey, you know, with the experience that they have and the ability that they have, do you realize all three of them played for the USA Collegiate National yes. team last summer? Who's got an outfield with three USA players? Yes. Now, Duplantis' stay only lasted one day because he crashed into a wall, mm-hmm. and Cabrera ended up replacing him. But they still had the ability to be on that team, and I think that's a wonderful thing. Listen, the fourth outfielder is going to be a superstar at LSU, Giovanni DiGiacomo. But I'm going to have trouble getting him in to play enough games. I thought he'd be our starting center fielder as a freshman, but he's got a great attitude. He's learning from those other guys. I'm going to get him his moments whenever I can. And if there's an injury or you know, short-term or long-term, hopefully Gio will be ready when he's called upon.
Early on, you really preach defense, don't you? And you're pretty comfortable with your infielders. You got to be strong up the middle. And I, in talking to you, you feel pretty good about your middle infield.
Jordy, your experiences are what make you as a coach, okay? And in my coaching career of 37 years, there's 2 years that stand out to me. 1 year was when I was at Notre Dame, and 1 year here at LSU, the year after we won the national championship. And I just remember how weak we were defensively at third base on those 2 days. Okay. And because we were weak defensively at third base, it just affected the entire season in such a negative way. So mm-hmm. for me, one of the priorities of building a team is to make sure that we have an airtight defense on the left side of the infield. And when you think back to Bregman and Ibarra or, you know, Nola and Helanihi in the 09 and some of the really good teams that we've had through the years, well, just recently, you know, we had Smith at third and Robertson at short. Right. You know, it allows you to have a good defensive team. So, Josh Smith is back now to play shortstop for us, but the silver lining of last year and his injury was that Hal Hughes ended up playing the whole year. Right. So Hal's got a ton of experience now, so I can slide him over to third base. He's going to play a great third base for us, and his hitting has improved enough that I think he's going to contribute enough offensively. He's not going to be a power hitter. He's not going to be a, you know, Scott Rolen, a typical, you know, David Wright, you know, third baseman with power. Uh-huh. But he's going to make the plays, and he's going to be a tough out. Combined with Josh Smith, I think we're going to have a good, solid left side of the infield. And then Brant Broussard played a whole year last year. At times I thought last year Brant, you know, was a little bit timid, a little bit unsure of himself. But now he's a fifth-year senior. He's confident. He's a leader out there. And I think he's going to do a fine job.
First base is kind of, I would guess, your one position that's a little bit floating. Someone's going to start, but maybe this thing moves around a little bit. Who knows, right?
Well, initially, the first game, Drew Bianco will start at first base for us.
Okay.
But we might have a different different first baseman the second day.
Gotcha.
I think that Bianco and Beloso have kind of separated themselves a little bit from C.J. Willis and Gavin Duggar. They can't rotate four first basemen, but you maybe could do it with two guys until one of them really takes the bull by the horns. But mm-hmm. I like the competitive zeal of both of those guys. And so I know on opening night it'll be Drew Bianco. I can't say for sure if it'll be him on the second day.
My gosh, are we not going to see the Palmieri that I've grown to know and love with, you know, what starts the season is not going to be the way it looks when league play starts? I mean, you always tinker and move things around, and it just seems to always work.
Well, you never know. Thank you for the compliment, first of all. I think it was a compliment.
It was.
Well, we may not need to because we have more veteran players. You know, usually the tinkering is when players are unproven and you've got to get that gut feeling. You know, I mean, there have been years with veterans way back in 09 when we moved LeMayu and put Austin Nolan. But in all honesty, Jordy, I like our infield defense the way it's set with those three guys. I like our outfield. We have two options behind the plate, but only one right now because Garza's not able to catch. We have a couple options at first base and a couple options for DH. So, we've dedicated a lot of our roster space to pitching, so it doesn't leave you a lot of options with your position players.
Is this maybe one of the most loaded pitching staffs that you have ever had on paper?
Well, it better, because we've made a significant investment in our pitching staff here. And, you know, we got very lucky. Landon Marceau, Jaden Hill, Cole Henry, Chase Costello, they could have all signed professionally coming out of high school. They all were. If they would have just said yes, they would have been drafted high. They would have received very significant signing bonuses. And then we get Zach Hess back. And now we get Eric Walker back from injury. So when you start adding that all together, along with, you know, the guys that came out of the Penn Force, like Peterson and Fontenot mm-hmm. and Beck, and don't forget Mikhail Hilliard, who was so critical to us last year, it's got a chance to be a good deep staff. And, you know, the teams that have good deep staffs usually have a chance to win and win consistently.
Well, it's a long journey, but you take it one game at a time. It's always a pleasure talking with you. We're all rooting for you, pulling for you. We hope that, you know, you had the number one recruiting class in 2009. You got the number one recruiting class now. I'm just saying. So one game at a time. No pressure, Paul. No pressure. Just good luck. And we're all pulling for you. And thank you so much for the time.
Okay. Great to be with you, Jordy.
All right. You take care. That's Palmieri. Opening night tonight at the Box. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with much, much more on this special Friday edition of the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow
follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter.
And now it's time. Here's your host, Shorty Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two on this Friday, February 15th, the year 2019. Hope everybody is doing great as we're counting down to the weekend. Schools are out. School zones are in effect. So be careful out there as you're out and about on the highways and byways. Yours truly, Jordy Hultberg here. He's my main man, CD, in the Master Control Suite, spinning the tunes, pushing all the buttons. A fun second hour that I'm really looking forward to. I get to talk basketball with my former coach, Dale Brown. He's legendary. His battles with Kentucky. We'll share some of those stories, some recruiting stories. We'll have some fun with Coach Dale Brown. It is season opener time. Baseball, if you missed hour number one, you missed our chat with Tony Robichaux and with Paul Maneri. If you want to go back and look at it, CD told you how to do that. Go to 1037thegame.com. You can find it. Dell Demp's gone. Oh, what else is in the hopper? Well, let's do our daily walk around the sports water cooler to find out. CD, button, please.
It's Friday. That means we get you ready for the weekend ahead with five,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5
big questions headed into your weekend. Now, let's get it going with your Friday 5 edition of Hot Topics.
All right, Friday 5, a little production done by my main man, CD. Good afternoon.
What is going on, Jordy? It's a fantastic Friday because Dell Demps is fired. It finally happened. We've been waiting for it forever. Why did it take so long?
I think they gave him the mandate. Look, you just get through this trade deadline situation. Don't do anything. And then when Anthony Davis left the building prior to the game being over to get this MRI and walking out with his agent, Chris Paul, that was the final straw that broke the proverbial camel's back in Gail Benson's eyes. And she cut the umbilical cord and said, Dell, later. So now the question is, can they find the right guy to take this franchise forward? That is the proverbial question. We'll see.
Exactly, Jordy. And they got a decent guy, I think, in there right now. They just announced moments ago, Jordy, Danny Ferry will be assuming the team's interim GM status. You know, I was going to ask who you think is going to be the next general manager, but Danny Ferry's got a decent resume. And it got me thinking, Jordy, what percentage likelihood do you think he goes from being an interim GM to being the full-time GM?
Wow. There's not much he can do right here and right now other than just hold down the position. He can't make any trades. He can't do any wheeling and dealing until the season is over and we get to the postseason. I'm going to give it a 40% chance that he's able to retain the position.
You know, I'm definitely leaning more towards, you know, I'm leaning like 35-30% because I think Gail Benson wants to basically burn the whole thing down and start over when it comes to the front office and kind of change everything because she's starting to realize that she can't run a football team and a basketball team. So it's kind of just separate everybody. That way everything can kind of run a little bit smooth. I think that's just the way I'm looking at it.
We'll see. She's very loyal. We'll see how Danny Ferry does what he does, how he does it, and then we'll go from there. But in all likelihood, they are, like I said, 40% is the highest, which means I don't believe he's going to be the man getting the job to pull the trigger on the Anthony Davis trade and maybe, just maybe, having to go find a new head coach as well.
Exactly, Jordy. And now we're going to move over to some more news about from the NFL side of things, though, Jordy. Breaking news all over the place. Antonio Brown. My goodness, this is interesting, Jordy. He wasn't going to meet up with Art Rooney, the owner of the Steelers, but now he's going to do it, Jordy. And it's making me think, Jordy, does this mean he wants to be with the Steelers now, or is he going to basically let him know what he wants, where he wants to go to wind up moving forward? Because I feel like he's going to wind up probably telling him like it is and telling him, hey, I want to go to San Francisco.
Yeah, I don't know what's going through Antonio Brown's mind. I would do this. I know that. I would not burn any bridges. I can tell you that. So I would go in, do you want me? Do you not? If not, then let's trade me. Let's go. And here's my reasons why. But I wouldn't burn any bridges. So, I have no clue about what Antonio Brown's going to do. I don't know if Antonio Brown knows what he's going to do in this meeting. So It'll all come out. Eventually it will come out. But if I had to bet, I think he wants to go. I think he wants to go to San Francisco. And how he goes about saying that, well, that's up to him.
Exactly, Jordy. He needs to handle it the right way. I mean, if he just tells them, hey, guys, like, I just want to go to San Francisco, bottom line, we end this now, it's over, and we can kind of walk away as respectful partners, because maybe down the road, Antonio Brown wants to go back for maybe one more year with the Steelers, even be like a lot. You see a lot of these players sign these one-day contracts to retire as a Steeler or a Saint or whatever.
Yeah, well, think about this as well. What if there's no big offer out there for him? What if the Steelers look at it and go, you know, we want more than a third round pick. We want more than this or that or the other. So Antonio Brown, I'm sure his agent's kind of gotten his ear a little bit, and he's saying, Antonio, don't be stupid, okay? Don't burn your bridges. Play it smart and talk nicely and see where this thing goes. But who knows?
Oh, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Antonio Brown, Art Rooney, of course, probably Ben Roethlisberger, Mike Tomlin. It just feels like the Pittsburgh Steelers and the New Orleans Pelicans, a lot of similarities, Jordy.
Yeah,
a hashtag dumpster fire.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah, I'm with you.
All right, Jordy, moving on. I saw this pop up earlier today involving the MLB. Luis Severino signed a big, or agreed to arbitration, I should say, for a big four-year deal worth $40 million. That's huge, Jordy. That makes me wonder, how big of a contender can the Yankees be in 2019?
You never count them out, because they'll wheel and deal. Money is no object to them, so they'll figure out something, figure out a way. Just what's up with Bryce Harper? Why? I mean, teams are reporting, and he still doesn't have a job. I mean, it's I don't get it. I have no clue as to who wants him and where he's going to go. I don't get it.
I mean, you could say the same thing about Manny Machado, Jordy. It feels like the MLB and the way free agency is, it is completely slanted and broken. And this is something I talked about with Ben Love a while back on the show, was out of all the major leagues that we cover here, MLB, NFL, and the NBA, I think the MLB is the one that's got the least amount of problems. But this problem is starting to show up every single year now, the last couple of seasons. Free agency, winter meetings, and all that, it definitely seems like everything kind of cools off, and you're kind of just left wondering, what is going on? Why are these big-name guys signing? Because you've been waiting for these guys to sign, that domino to drop, and then you see everything else happen. You don't see that kind of issue in the NBA right now, Jordy, with how things are set up. What's going on?
I salary caps in the NBA, that's you can only do so much. Major League Baseball has none, and is Bryce Harper worth $40 million? Nobody's worth $40 million a year. And I think the owners are saying, wait a minute, hold on. Stop the madness. So, I mean, somebody's going to sign him. It may not be for what Bryce Harper wants. Somebody's going to sign him. He's talent, and talent always prevails. I'm just curious what the dollar amount's going to be.
I'm interested as well, Jordy. That's going to be fun. And last one, going to wrap things up on a higher note, Jordy. More about what's going on this weekend. The slam dunk contest is Saturday, and I want to just kind of catch in a bunch of playlists of some of the greatest dunks of all time. In fact, I saw somebody regrade a lot of the 50 dunks that have happened over the years, and that was kind of fun just looking back at some of those. And it got me thinking, Jordy, got me thinking about the all-time great dunks. So which one's your favorite of all time, Jordy?
I thought Vince Carter was just unbelievable.
The honey dip.
Phenomenal with the way he did it and saying it's over. So he's my all-time most exciting slam dunk. The Michael Jordan, Dominique Wilkins head-up matchup was spectacular. There's been some really, really good ones. There have been some boring ones.
Yeah.
I don't know how they continue to come up with creative and innovative stuff. I don't know. But it's out there. But Vince Sanity was my all-time favorite dunk contest. He put his arm through the rim and caught it by the elbow joint. It was ridiculous how high he got up.
And it's just the fact that, like, you realize a couple years beforehand you had the dunk contest get completely removed in favor of two ball and a lot of other things. And this was kind of the return of the slam dunk contest.
That's right.
Getting into relevance. And now it's just basically a lot of the young studs. You're not seeing the LeBrons of the world. You're not seeing all these big names that you would love to see in these dunk contests just going at it, because that probably made the dunk contest even more fun if you had, I think LeBron younger.
I think LeBron is scared to lose. I really do. That's why he didn't want to ruin his image. But Michael Jordan went out there and did it. I got a late entry into the slam dunk contest. Go bring Marlon Taylor. Fly him up after the LSU-Georgia game. Fly him to Charlotte and let him play in that thing and watch him jump.
Do they still do that NCAA dunk contest, Jordy?
Yeah, I think they do. But those are seniors, and he's just a young
guy. Make an exception.
All right. That's right. I'm with you. There's your Hot Topics for today, brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. The Billiard family getting it done. When we come back, Dale Brown talking hoops. Can't wait.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
And welcome back. What a great treat for me personally, and I know each and every one of you will enjoy it as well. It got me thinking when LSU had that big win over the Kentucky Wildcats at Rupp Arena earlier this week. It's been a long time. Not many people go into that arena and win. I wanted to share it and get some thoughts from my head coach, the legendary Dale Brown, and he's kind enough to join us now. We're going to spend some time and just talk a little bit. Coach, how are you, my friend?
Jay, you know, I should call you. No, I won't call you what Kenny Higgs call you. You remember what he used to call you?
Yeah. I don't want to talk
Gordy
about that.
Gordy Holbrook.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that.
How are you, Coach? Jordy, no complaints at all. None. Zero.
I cannot tell you how many people come up to me in a weekly basis. You hear from Coach Brown? What's he doing and how's he doing? So why don't you, for all the people that care about you that are listening right now, what occupies Coach Brown's day these days?
Well, let's start with, for many years, and I'm still doing it, I had a foundation, and I'm still doing charity thing, and that takes up quite a bit of time. I also do public speaking around the country and around the world, not as much anymore. As you age, of course, that diminishes because you're not what they call hot, supposedly. Now, I'll give you an analogy of that in a minute. And then I do a lot of work on the computer, and I'm a voracious reader. I love to read. And I try to work out. I'm not working out. Pardon me? I'm not working out like I used to. I'm making an excuse. And I got three grandchildren I keep up with. One just graduated from LSU Law School. My oldest, Christopher, is a lawyer in New Orleans. My middle grandson is the assistant basketball coach, graduate assistant at Baylor. And my youngest grandson's at LSU.
Wow.
So I'm staying more than busy.
Maybe another coach in the family. That's awesome.
Yeah, he will be. The middle one is obsessed with it, and he's got great knowledge. I've taken him to about four or five Final Fours with me. And so we spent every hour. We roomed together, of course, just with the one room, and we talked about basketball, and we'd go to the game. Uh-huh. He'd spot kids. Some people have a good eye. You had a good long-range shot, man. If that three-point shot would have been in during your whole career, that would jack your points up a lot. But anyway, he just has good vision. And two Final Fours in a row, he tells me about this one kid. He's like, tell you, Pop, he can play in the NBA. And I didn't want to hurt the kid's feelings. He's a sensitive kid. And I said, Peyton, they ain't a snowball's chance in hell that kid will ever play in the NBA. Well, 2 years go by. Guess who winds up being a lottery pick? And that kid is still playing in the NBA. He did it once before, so he's got a good eye for talent, and he really loves the game of basketball. I'm bombarding him with all my old books and all the John Wooden notes I have and Tex Winter.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Before we get into the Kentucky win, I just wanted you to share your thoughts on how you were obsessed with Kentucky when we were all together, and you were, you know, you hadn't been at LSU for very long, but you knew that if you could handle Kentucky, that means you had arrived in the SEC. Take me back to those times and what that name, that Kentucky name, meant to you.
Let me start from the very embryo stages. When Jack Shallow, another North Dakota, and Homer Drew and I got here, the first thing I did, I wanted to get an SEC basketball media guy. Now, I knew Kentucky was the powerhouse, but I just wanted to see what was our competition. Well, I looked it up, and Kentucky had won, like, double the championships that the entire league had won. I say, damn. And I go down the list, and I say, well, I wonder how many times LSU's beaten them. Geez, I go down the list, I go down the list, I go down the list, I go down the list. One time in Baton Rouge. Yeah. Let's see how many times they've beaten them on the road. Go down the list. The average loss was 25 points a game. They, I believe they had never beaten them. They might have beaten them once at Kentucky, but they only had two wins, I believe, at the time. Uh-huh. So I remember boldly in the first meeting we had writing up there who our competition is. Here's the Kingpins. And I'm sure they thought this carpetbagger from North Dakota's nuts. I said, that's who we're after. Kentucky is the dominant team. That's who we're after. Well, by being dominant, it was pretty simple. In 1936, when it started in 1972, LSU had only beaten Kentucky twice during that entire time.
Right.
And so we set out doing that, and it wasn't easy, but you guys made it a lot easier. In fact, you won, I think, 5 out of 9 times against them, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Sure did.
They are the premium. And the win the other night did a lot for Will Wade and his team, I'm sure. Now, all of a sudden, they're going to be the hunted.
Yeah.
When you beat Kentucky, that's a sign you're on the road.
You're right. What do you think of the job that Will Wade has done? Because he kind of reminds me a little bit, not as fiery as you in some ways, but boy, he attention to detail. You can see it, and that was your strength as well.
Yeah. Before I ever met him, people were coming up and saying, "Man, he reminds me a lot of you." And I said, "Oh, I better pray for him then." No, see, he really does. So I'd never been to his practice. He invited me, and I didn't go. But I had gone to some games. But we did meet for lunch one day. First thing I noticed about him, the very first thing, he's such a good listener. He listens. He's got a good personality. Now, he's got to be a great recruiter. It's impossible to do what he did. Get this talent in there. The 8 players Will has at LSU, in my opinion, are the 8 best players in the country on any Division I team. Now, let me add an asterisk to that. They may not have the best 2 players. They may not have the best 5. But they've got the best 8. These are athletes. He also, he's got them, he really cares about them. And he's doing his best to help them. They see that. They're doing their best to help him. There's no dissension. They play well together. They play hard. They dive on the floor for loose balls. I watch the body language at timeout. Or I watch the body language when they're free throwing. Tremont Waters will walk over. He always puts his arm around around Will Wade. So the chemistry is really good. I think he's done an outstanding job. And I think this team, if they continue to go, is going to go down on one of the great teams in LSU history.
Wow. That says an awful lot, because there's been some great ones that you managed and controlled
They've got the potential to go down.
For many a year.
They've got it all. They've got the best point guard in the country, no question.
I was going to ask you about him, because there have been some great point guards at LSU. This Tremont Waters is among the best of the best that's ever put on an LSU jersey, in my opinion. He is, boy, his ball handling skills are off the chart. You know,
He's like Houdini with the ball. He's a magician. The 5 best point guards, Pete Maravich, he was more of a point guard than he was an off guard.
Yeah.
Chris Jackson.
Yeah.
Tremont Waters, Ethan Martin, Derek Taylor.
Whew.
Now, those 5, you were a shooting guard.
Yeah.
Those five guys. Now, when you compare Tremont is not Chris Jackson. But let me add this. He's a far superior defensive player to Chris because of this reason. Chris had Tourette's syndrome, and it's difficult to concentrate with Tourette's syndrome because they've got those twitching things. Now, with the offense, it was different. That twitching with his head drew guys off.
Yeah.
He was controlling it, but he can't – something he can't control, he's not as good at. But first road game, Chris Jackson ran. He got 55 points at Florida. If you recall. But he was one of the great ones.
That's good coaching right there, man. Yeah, that's awesome. And you gave him the green light, and deservedly so. He was spectacular. You're really high on this Marlon Taylor kid. What a great athlete he is, huh?
Hey, I've seen some great athletes in my 25 years in head coach here and 22 watching him from a retirement stage. I've seen some of the greatest jumpers in the world. I don't know, and is this valid? This is nebulous to a certain extent. I think he's got the quickest explosive power and the greatest vertical jump of anybody I've seen. I've seen some pretty good ones. I've seen Dwayne Scales.
Yeah.
I've seen Dominique Wilkins. I've seen darn good Kenny Walker.
Yeah.
He's better than them, their vertical jump. I'd like to see what his vertical jump is.
Oh, my gosh. Man, I'm so jealous of that. If I had, oh my God, we all are jealous of that. But let's do this, Coach. Let's take a quick timeout because I really want to pick your brain on some other things. So if you don't mind, stick around for just another. We got one more segment.
I will be related to.
All right, hold tight. We're talking with Dale Brown, the former LSU Tiger basketball coach, and Dick Vitale said it best: they should name the court after him. And we're gonna keep pushing until they do. We'll be right back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show.
I'm Jeff Biggs, and a big story on this Friday. The NFL has reached a settlement agreement with both Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid, who both filed grievances against the league. Details have not yet been released due to...
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Hey, we welcome you back, ladies and gentlemen. He's the second all-time winningest coach in SEC basketball history behind the Baron, Adolph Rupp. Dale Brown, kind enough to hang on with us. Whenever I talk to somebody from Kentucky, they always say to tell you hello, and they always want to know the story behind why you threw the coat on the court back there, back in the day when you were just starting out as the head coach at LSU.
Yes.
Yeah, I know you remember it vividly. Share the story with us.
I remember it vividly. It was in Rupp Memorial Coliseum. They're loaded with players. We can't even get a African-American to even visit that those early stages because their fathers were rejected here, so they were bitter about it, which is understandable. So I knew it was going to take some time, but I kept on telling this team, hey, stick with the system, and I promise you, we'll get after them one year. Well, anyway, we foul out practically our whole team. And Kentucky ain't fouled anybody out, and there's no foul trouble and what have you. It's late in the ball game. And I believe Reggie Copeland was the ref, and I walked over to him. I said, Reggie, look over at this bench. I said, look at those kids crying. We're not getting a fair shake here, man. And I said, you're taking everything from us. Just give it. Hey, I'm going to call a technical line. Reggie, just admit it to me that it's been lopsided. And I said, I'm telling you, if you don't, I'll take this damn coat and throw it out in the middle of the court. You're taking everything else from me. You might taking everything else from us. You might just take my wardrobe too. Come on, Dale, sit down. So I took my coat out, and it was just like God took it. It was like a discus or a flying saucer. It landed right on the middle of that cave. And but I want to give you some trivia. You're good at this. And by the way, yes, you are. Who was the first coach ever to beat Kentucky? They started playing against Kentucky in 1936. Who was the first coach at LSU to beat Kentucky?
Harry Rabenhorst?
Nope. Harry Rabenhorst did not win a game against Kentucky.
All right. Dale Brown?
Nope.
I don't know.
From 1936 to 1961, it took 25 years. This wonderful man, Jay McCrary, beat him. That was the first win. Then 11 years later,
what a sweetheart. Yeah.
Jay McCrary was a wonderful human being. Not jealous at all when we had our success. Then 11 years later, Pete's father, Press, wins.
Okay.
And then it got pretty... Okay, final trivia. Who has the second most wins over Kentucky, LSU coaches?
The second most? I know you've got the most.
Correct.
Boy, second most. I have no clue. Jay McCreary.
Nope. Jay McCreary only beat him once. Press Maravich only beat him once. Three guys are tied for second.
Trent
John
Johnson?
Brady beat him twice. Trent Johnson beat him twice, and Johnny Jones beat him twice, and Will Wade's beaten him twice.
And how many times did Dale Brown beat him?
We've played Kentucky. LSU's played Kentucky since 1936, 27 times. And I was fortunate enough to be able to have good enough players to beat him 18 times.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You talked about Will Wade.
Part of that.
Well, we had a lot of really good players, but you talked about Will Wade and his recruiting acumen. You were the ultimate salesman. You could sell ice to an Eskimo. Tell me the one. Is there one recruit when you got him that you went, oh my gosh, all the heart? I know you got a bunch of great ones, but who was the one? Is there one that you went, I can't believe it? Here we go.
I think the biggest miracle, if I would call it not, I can tell you, I made more mistakes in recruiting, and I can tell you about a couple of those superstars that are in the NBA or were in the NBA. But I think probably the major recruit we got, there'd be two people. One preceded the other, obviously. What made us legitimate is when a kid from Kentucky by the name of Rudy Macklin is being pursued by two of the national powerhouses, Louisville and Kentucky, and he chose to come here. That made us legitimate. Hey, LSU got an African-American that can play. Man, this guy's a great player. He's a da-da-da. I think that opened the door. And then probably the second one would probably have to be the John Williams, the high school player of the year.
Okay.
He could play every position. UCLA was knocking his front and his back door down and his ceiling and every place else. Those two.
Jordy Holtberg,
when I saw him.
Don't
be miserable.
Give me, Coach, give me the name of the one that you went, oh, no. Well, we worked so hard and we tried. I mean, you mentioned some names. You said you made some mistakes. What's the one, the big fish that got away that you just couldn't believe?
Well, a couple of them were my fault. Probably the biggest mistake was I was a friend of the national coach of the Amsterdam team.
Mm-hmm.
And he called me and told me he had this 7'3 kid. Why don't I come to Holland and take a look at him? I knew the guy because he used to be in the Czech Republic, and I helped him get out of the Czech Republic during the communist period, helped him get over to Amsterdam, became the coach. So I went there. He worked out twice, once in the morning, once late mid-afternoon. He was at least 7'3". We go to his home that night for dinner. We come back, and I work him out in the morning. So now the kid wants to come to LSU. So I said to him, son, here's what I think is best. I don't think you're ready for the SEC yet. But what we should do, I'll put you in junior college over in Texas. Bo Bonson's father was coaching at Wharton College over in Texas. I'll place you there, and in 2 years, you'll come to LSU. Well, he was thrilled by it. So I called Bo's father and told him, you got a scholarship available? I got you a 7'3 guy that's going to be a player one day. He said, oh, certainly. Well, make a long story short, a fellow from the Czech Republic happened to contact him. He was coaching at Marist College. He brings him to Marist. His name is Rick Smith. Played 14 years in the NBA, and I messed up on it. Then probably another one I messed up on. We played the Yugoslavian national team. Their center was pretty good. After the ball game, there's a knock on the door, and the coach and the player were out in the hall. I went out in the hall, and the coach spoke halfway decent English, but I don't believe the player spoke much. He said, my player, we got one more game left. We're going to Indiana tomorrow, and he'd like to stay. He wanted to play at LSU. Now, we beat him. And I said, well, we're pretty well filled up for next year. It was Vlade Divac.
Oh, man.
And the third, hey, these are just some of my mistakes. Denny the Dimwit, you're talking to him. But it is tough. How do you know what kind of character they have till you get them? How do you know how hard they're going to work? Are they going to be able to make it academically? You put all those things in a pot, and that's where this year's team is remarkable, how in 1 year you could bring all those players in and put them together and have talent like that in depth. They're men. They look like an NBA team.
Yeah, and I guess the most difficult thing, and you dealt with this, and so many people ask about the Shaq, Stanley Roberts, Chris Jackson team. What's your biggest regret with that group? Because you get it all the time. How can you not win with that group, right?
That's probably one of the most top topics of all. We did win with that group. They were only together. You got to remember now, Stanley and Shaquille were freshmen.
Right.
Chris was a sophomore. None of the three were leaders. Chris was silent. Stanley was shy, and Shaquille really was getting his feet on the ground. He really didn't. He wasn't real. So we didn't have real good leaders. Now that's my fault. Also, I don't think I was as good with that team as I was with the '86 team. I think I was more fired up with them. It was very difficult to blend them together because they only got together 1 year. Now, you remember the 3 years Shaquille was here, his record was better than it was at in the NBA.
Yeah,
we won an SEC championship. Mm-hmm. We were runner up twice, one game out of winning it. We won 23 games and 26 and 20 games. We went to three NCAA tournaments. We did not perform well. And I think we just didn't have the right. And of course, you got to realize now that Shaquille only played 1 year with Chris Jackson.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Those guys only had 1 year together. It wasn't like they were together for 3 years.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. No question. And that's what I think made the best team you ever had, that 1981 team that went to the Final Four. I mean, those were 4 and 5 year seniors a lot on that team. But that helps so much instead of this one and done stuff.
I believe that's accurate. I believe if they play here 100 years at LSU, I don't think, and this is not being Donald Trump being narcissistic, it has nothing to do with me, it has to do with the players. I don't believe LSU may ever have a team like that. I mean, every spot was filled. And had we had the three-point shot at that time, we'd have even been better. And it was a unique team. They were tough. They ran. They dove on the floor. That was one of the great teams. This is going to go down, this team, if it continues. This team will go down as one of the great teams in LSU history. Now, John Brady had two doggone good teams.
Yeah.
He'd have to put up there, too.
Yeah. No, there's no question, and common denominator, they all had really, really good talent, and you're right, eight players, that's pretty good. You were always your best when you didn't have a lot of players, a deep bench, because they just had to play through their mistakes, and they got better and better, and that's hard to do as
a
coach.
I think that's accurate. Well, that 87 team, we had nobody in that team got drafted. We were 6 seconds away going to a second Final Four in a row when Indiana shot the air ball and put it up, and we got the ball and got the last shot and missed it up in Cincinnati.
That team
had nobody went anywhere. John Williams was gone then.
Coach Dale Brown, kind enough to join us. We're just talking memory lane and all that kind of stuff. It all stemmed from this Kentucky situation. Now we'll see LSU going to Georgia.
May I make a last comment on this show?
Yeah, absolutely.
My last comment. I would like anyone listening, children listening, parents listening, coaches listening. I could not speak. Jordy called me yesterday. I had appointments today that I couldn't get out of.
Yeah.
Right. I shouldn't get out of. Three different appointments. And I told him no. And so he kind of harassed me, you would. So I thought about 50 minutes, and I thought, you know what? I've got to be on Jordy's show. Not that he's going to raise his ratings any, but just first of all, he's one of my former players. But number two, Jordy Holtberg is the epitome for any of you parents that are listening, and your son, Jordy Holtberg was a doggone good player. He started for us. But I had to make a decision. It's like, who do you go with? Carson Wentz or Foles, that type of thing. We went with a younger guy. a little guy by the name of Ethan Martin, who may be the best overall guard I've seen in a long time. And Jordy Hoeper had to take the role of a reinforcement. Not once. And I know there was pain. I know maybe mom and dad, although they never said anything to me. What's that Dale Brown doing? What are you doing? How come that guy's doing this? Not once did you waver. You were a leader. Not once did you waver. And that's the reason I went on the team. I thought that is loyalty. That's the way sports should be. It wasn't any fun for you to go on the bench when you were a star that year before. And you did it, and you took the role well.
And we just kept winning. Winning cures everything, Coach. You know that.
Boy,
winning
does
cures
it ever cure
everything. Everything. In closing, you built LSU basketball. LSU basketball had always been known for great individual players, Sparky Wade and Bob Pettit and Pistol Pete. When you came, it became known for really, really great teams. And what is the proudest thing that you when you go to bed at night and you think about your 20 plus years as the head coach at LSU, what's the thing that you're the most proud of?
I think it's a good question. Are you talking about teams or me personally?
You personally. What really are you the most proud of?
I think the fact that after 44 years of coaching and taking time off to ponder what I was going to do with my future, run for U.S. Senate, go to law school, travel all over the world, be a motivational speaker, what? Sit taking a month off. I then recognize my mistakes, my limitations, and my distance from the ideal. So, but the one thing I think I was the proudest of, I never used a player. I never lied to a player. Could have I done better to motivate him? Could have I done better in coaching techniques? Obviously you can. And if you don't, you're a total idiot thinking you can't. That's why John Wooden was so good. He was always self-analyzing himself. But I think the proudest thing, I keep in touch with all the players. I know all of them are. I don't try to favor any player. If you were a walk-on, I would try to treat you with the same dignity. And I think the other thing is, years ago, I wrote a little piece called "We Owe Them Our Best," and it was really what you owe your players. They come to you in tattered tennis shoes, you know. Are you just going to use them and flush them out? The graduation rate, the guys that stay there, 85% of them got a college degree.
Yeah,
I mean
that's awesome,
and that says a lot about the player. So, and in recruiting, I never recruited a player that I ever thought. Now, I messed up on some players. I didn't like their attitudes or personality.
Right.
They probably would have messed up on me, too. They wouldn't like my attitude and personality. But we didn't recruit them. I thought there were a couple of them were just not right for our program. And they went on and became NBA stars. I lived with that. That didn't bother me at all. All I wanted to do, the first time I ever recruited, I didn't know one thing about recruiting, and the head coach at Utah State, I was his assistant, told me I was director of recruiting. I said, "Coach, I don't know anything about recruiting. I'm a high school coach." He says, "Well, that's why we hired you. We're having losing seasons. The job's up to you. You're the ringleader." First home I went into, I parked out in front, and I thought, I got there 15 minutes early, like I called you early so I wouldn't be late if the phone was busy or something, like today. I sat in the car. And I said, "I know what everybody's going to tell them. We got the prettiest girls on campus. We got the greatest food. Man, you don't have to go to class. We got a tutor who'll take care of you. We can get you a car. Don't worry about your eligibility." I knew those things were going to go on. So I go to the door. There's no father in the home. The mom answers. The young boy's there. We sit down. And I said, "I hope you don't take wrong what I'm going to say." And it just happened. I didn't set it up. I didn't write a speech. I didn't have a speech writer. I said, "I'm here recruiting a human being first and a basketball player second. And if he follows the rules and guidelines I set up, I can promise you it'll be a great experience. I can promise you he'll graduate. And if he doesn't do that, he'll be disciplined properly. I will treat him as though I had a son. I would treat him with the same philosophy. So are those that left here or I suspended and didn't bring back, do they think I was fair to them? No, I'm sure they didn't. But
Coach, I love you.
Truth.
I love you to death.
Jordy.
I can't thank you enough for your time. We'll see you at the next ball game. All right?
Okay, Jordy. Have a good
okay,
one.
Okay, Coach. Thank
Love you.
There's Dale Brown. Uncensored, unfiltered, and, yeah, he's like Frank Sinatra, man. Did it his way. We'll be back. Stay with us.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, running out of time here. Let's get straight to it on this day in sports history here on the Jordy Hultberg Show, February 15th, the year 1998. If at first you don't succeed, try again. In his 20th try, Dale Earnhardt Sr. finally won in Daytona, his first, but his 71st victory of his career on this day, February 15th, 1998. If it is your birthday today, happy, happy birthday from all of us at Delta Media, KLWB, 103.7 The Game. I hope you have a great day. You share it with the likes of Jaromir Jagr. Happy 46th birthday to the NHL star. And a happy 74th birthday to my near and dear friend, Mr. Doug Morrow, friend of the program. Happy birthday, Douglas. If it's your anniversary, man, happy anniversary to each and every one of you. Hope you have a great, great celebration and keep adding year after year after year to it. On a very busy day, special thanks to the head coaches of the Raging Cajuns, Tony Robichaux of LSU, Paul Maneri, wish both of the clubs, both of their teams, the very, very best of success this season. And I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did talking to my old coach, Dale Brown. So, good Friday show. CD, job well done as always. You're the best in the business at what you do, and I greatly appreciate your efforts each and every day. Thanks to all of you for listening in. Thanks to our partners for making it possible each and every day. It's the weekend. Hope you have a great rest of your afternoon and evening, and even better Saturday and Sunday. And come on back Monday, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game. We'll tell you all about LSU baseball, the Raging Cajun baseball team. We'll see if LSU keeps it going on the hardwood, and the All-Star break is upon us. Have a great weekend, everybody. Until Monday, I'm Jordy Hultberg. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.